Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Days and two episodes of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with Bob Bailey. Enjoy.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Dollar, this is Fred Starkey.
Starkey?
Worldwide Mutual out here in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, sure, Fred. How are you?
Look here, Dollar, if you're free for a couple of days, I'd like to have you come on out here.
Oh, what's it all about?
Mrs. George Hemingway Tilford. Ever hear of her?
Tilford? No, I don't think so.
Pretty wealthy, especially since a fire a few months ago. It destroyed a big lumber yard that her husband left to her. And Dollar, she wants to see you right away.
Did she tell you why?
No, she's being very mysterious about it.
Something to do with that lumberyard fire, I suppose.
Well, she simply wouldn't say, but she insists on having you come out to see her.
Well, as long as your company won't quibble over the expense account...
Yes, I guess we're stuck for it.
Plus my usual fee, of course.
Well, now, that depends on what you mean by usual.
Let's talk about it when I get there.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Worldwide Mutual Insurance Company, Columbus, Ohio office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the loss by a hair matter. Expense account item 14175, plane fare from Hartford to New York to Columbus, Ohio. It was after 2 a.m. when the big silver bird dropped me off at Port Columbus Airport. Item 2, 250 for a taxi into the Deschlick Hilton. It was no time to rouse Fred Starkey out of bed, so item 3, 1420 for a nightcap, a comfortable room there in the hotel, and a kind of brunch late the next morning. So late, as a matter of fact, that I had to wait for Starkey to come back from his lunch before I could see him at the office of Worldwide Mutual. See him and ask him questions.
Sorry, Dollar, but you just won't say.
Yeah, well, now look, Fred, I like to know something about a case I've come this far to handle.
I'm not even sure there's a case here.
Well, you told me that she owned a big lumber yard that had burned down some months ago.
Exactly 9 weeks ago.
All right, how much insurance?
Dollar, it was a total loss. It cost the company $330,000.
Wow, wait.
Fortunately, it was underinsured.
Underinsured?
Now, these days, the ground alone out there is worth that much.
Out where?
It's near Minerva Park.
Arson by any chance?
No. No sign of it whatsoever.
She, possibly need the money?
Hardly. Her husband left her over $250,000 in securities when he died a couple of years ago.
No. Nothing suspicious at all, huh?
Except that suspicious mind of yours. Now listen, Johnny, I didn't say her wanting to see you has anything to do with that fire. That was your idea. Maybe she just wants a look at you. A great admirer of yours, I understand.
Oh, sure.
Well, do you always expect to find arson, fraud, or murder, some sort of crime whenever somebody calls on you?
No, not always. Well, that's the way it usually turns out.
But don't you see, if this had something to do with her insurance, she would have said as much.
But if it hasn't, why did she ask for me?
Well, I told you.
You told me what?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why she wants to see you, but I'm willing to bet that it has nothing to do with that fire.
$500?
$500.
Huh. Fred, how do I get there? Item 4, a $50 deposit on a rental car, and I drove north on Cleveland Avenue, that's Route 3, to the pleasant little town of Minerva Park. The Tilford home, while not a mansion, was a large stone and stucco affair with plenty of trees and well-kept lawns. All in all, a real nice place in good condition.
Yes? Oh!
The surprise was the widow Tilford, in her middle 60s, I guess, but with a sparkle in her eye that made you feel she ought to be 25 years younger. She was dressed in well-tailored sport clothes. Her hair was gray, but cut in a short bob. And her subtle use of makeup made her look like a million.
Johnny Dollar.
Mrs. Tilford?
That's right. And, Johnny, I'm such a fan of yours and that radio program that I hear every Sunday on WBNS that, well, I'll break down and confess that about a year ago I wrote and asked for your picture.
Oh.
And Lou wrote me the nicest letter when you sent it.
Oh, of course. Grace Tilford.
That's right. And when you started off the letter with Dear Grace, why, it made me feel almost young again.
I know something. I think you are pretty young, Mrs. Tilford.
Oh, one look at you, Johnny, and I wish I was. But with this old heart of mine hitting on only about one cylinder. Come in.
Yeah, sure.
And now this. We're going to bypass the living room and sneak into the library.
Sneak in?
Yes. So that we can talk alone for a little while. You see, your three suspects are there in the living room. You see?
Just, what do you mean by suspects?
Right in here, Johnny, and they won't disturb us.
Okay.
Now, sit down and be comfortable.
Thanks.
Now, Johnny, I suppose you're curious about why I sent for you.
Yeah, well, according to Fred Starkey, it's all a big mystery.
Oh, mystery's right. Was right. But, Johnny, I've solved it.
Oh?
Yes. The mystery of why my lumberyard burned down a few weeks ago.
You mean it was Seton?
That's exactly what I mean. I had no proof in the beginning, no reason to think it was Seton, but I have now.
By whom, Mrs. Tilford?
Oh, I wish you'd call me Grace, Johnny, just to flatter me a bit.
Okay, sure. But who set the fire? All right. You said three suspects out there in the living room.
That's right. Would you like to go in and meet them? And then pick out the one it is?
You say that one of those three people sitting out there in the living room set that lumberyard fire?
Yes, Johnny and I collected $330,000 on it after all. The police and firemen had found nothing to indicate arson.
Well, believe me, it's hard to spot in a fire like that.
Then I got to thinking about those three, about how each of them could profit by it.
Possible that all three could have had a hand in it?
Get together on anything. Trust each other. Oh, never, never.
Okay, then.
Then a couple of days ago, I learned something. Proof that one of them did it.
Which one?
Well, if I know you, you're clever enough to find out.
But if you already know, and suppose the one who did it knows that you know.
Oh, not a chance. Oh, at least I don't think there is. And at least none of them has made any move against
me. But if one of them... you better tell me which one.
Well, now. Do you ever tell who's the guilty one on your radio program right at the beginning?
Oh, now, let's face it, this is a little bit different. If you're holding out just for the sake of a big dramatic climax.
Oh, well, yes and no.
Oh, come on. Now, listen, Miss Tilford.
Grace.
All right, Grace. But now, please, listen to me.
You listen, Johnny. I said I have proof, but I have to be absolutely sure. And there's where you can not only help me, but you'll know exactly how to proceed, how to take him in, or her, without danger to the rest of
us. Listen, will you? If the guilty one knows that you know, you might be in pretty serious danger.
Even with you around?
Yes, even with me around.
Well, I'm simply not going to tell you until you've met them and drawn your own conclusions.
Okay, then let's get in it.
All right. The middle-aged man is Harry W. Shelder, my husband's business manager before he passed on. He's not only very clever, but his sole interest in life is in money.
I see.
He did very well for my husband, but I've always felt he was really looking out for himself.
But why set off the lumberyard?
Because replaced by homes and stores and supermarkets, it could be worth millions, he said.
Ah, and you refused to do that?
Yes. The lumber company had been in our family for generations. Gave me all the money I could want, so I wouldn't change it.
But if it just happened to burn to the ground?
Exactly. All of my objections would be wiped out.
Then if he's the
now
one...
Wait, Johnny. Then there's Michael Tilford.
Well, the younger man I noticed in there.
Our adopted son. After college, business college, he tried to make his way, but not very successfully. Oh. Actually, he's been living on our bounty the past few years.
A ne'er-do-well, Grace?
Oh, well, he's not very good at anything. His ideas for that property aren't so ambitious as Harry Shelder's, but he's wanted me to sell it out to one of the development companies. And why? Because my husband's will provided that in the event of my death, he'd get half the income from it.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So he was bitterly opposed to my keeping it as a lumberyard.
A motive for one, motive for two. And who's the third, the girl I saw in there?
Nancy Willard, my niece. Ever since her parents died, quite penniless, by the way. We've taken care of her. It's simply out of pity, Johnny, not love. And, although I may change it now, she's heir to the bulk of my estate.
Yeah. Well, offhand, I'd say that Michael is the least suspect of the three. Let's go talk to them.
Then I'll leave you alone with them. I want to clean up before dinner and wash my hair. It's a mess.
Looks great to me.
What? Like this?
Okay, okay. You gals have to have something to fuss about, I suppose. Now let's go in and see those folks. Under the circumstances, there was nothing I could do but play along with her little game, her dramatic little mystery matter. But not for too long. On the excuse she had to go up and wash her hair, she left me with them there in the living room. And what a trio.
As I've told you half a dozen times now, Dollar, Mrs. Tilford hasn't long to live. According to her doctor, not more than 5 or 6 years at the most. Don't you see what I mean?
Maybe, Mr. Shelter. Go on.
As long as she's alive and lets me handle things, she can make millions with that property.
And you?
Well, of course, I get a percentage of the capital gains I achieve for
her. And I say those fancy plans of yours are too much of a gamble, Harry.
Just wait,
I
Michael.
Say play it safe. Let somebody else take the risk. That's all. Then all we have to do is... I mean, all Mother has to do is sit by and share in the profits.
A small share instead of all the profits.
With you running things, I'd want a pretty good accounting, Harry.
You think you could handle a project like I have in mind?
One like I have in mind. Nothing to it.
I wouldn't trust your judgment or you, as a matter of fact.
Oh, now stop it, kids. What kind of people will Johnny Dollar think we are? Sorry, Johnny.
Oh, I find this all very interesting, Nancy.
Don't you see, Dollar? Listen to me.
No, you listen, Michael. Every time we get together this way, it's the same old thing. I've said it before, and I say it again. Let Auntie Grace handle things her own way.
Of course. You're well provided for without even having to lift a finger.
That's right, Harry. I'm not one of the hired help.
Nancy, I resent that.
But she does have a point there.
Sure, so go ahead and resent. But, oh, now look, it's cocktail time, so... Let's have Haskell bring in the drinks and talk about other things, or just get quietly loaded. Haskell! This is Haskell!
There's no reason why one of us can't bring this.
Don't bother, Harry.
Yes? You called to me, miss?
Bring in the portable bar and plenty of ice cubes.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be after getting it for you right away.
Where's my aunt?
About to get under the hairdryer last time I was up the stairs.
Tell her to come down and join us.
Yes, ma'am. That'll work.
And while we're waiting, let's try to be civil to each other.
To say I didn't particularly like these three would be an understatement. And I could picture any one of them having set that fire. For the next few minutes, they simply sat and glared at each other until we heard Mrs. Haskell come running clumsily down the stairs.
Miss Nancy! Mr. Shelter! Mr. Michael!
Haskell! I thought you were going to bring...
Haskell! What's the matter?
It's Mrs. Tilford up there in her room.
Well...
She's dead.
Mrs. Tilford, there in her bedroom, had died alone. Apparently, she'd been sitting under a hairdryer, then simply fallen to the floor, the big professional-looking machine falling beside her. Fortunately, the heating coils had apparently broken before they could set fire to anything. A big hunk of suspicion started building up at the back of my head. But then Dr. Taylor came and pronounced it death from a heart attack.
Well, yet I must confess, I certainly didn't... Well, she took such good care of herself. I was certain she'd live on for several years. Well, I'll go downstairs and make up my report and arrange to have the body taken care of.
Well, we won't have to argue about the handling of her affairs anymore. Unless, of course, the court lets me act as executor of her estate. In which case, I warn
you... Harry, how can you be so callous about it?
Oh, shut up, Haskell.
But Michael's right, Harry.
Oh, sure. I suppose you two are heartbroken about her dying like this.
Alone. She died all alone up here.
Oh, quit.
While we were downstairs trying to pick her apart like a bunch of vultures, in spite of the way she treated all of us.
What do you mean by that, Mike?
We got so much better than we deserve. That's what I mean. All three of us. Harry, never bothering to see her, to come here and be nice to her. Just parked in his office in town, juggling figures to get as much out of her as he could.
Michael, I resent...
I don't care if you do. Heaven only knows how much you've cheated her since Father died.
Only your foster father, remember?
And Nancy, sitting around here, sponging off her, sweet-talking her, waiting for her to die.
Look who's talking.
With all the things she's done for you, Michael, you haven't even had the decency to come and visit her now and then.
Yes, I know.
When was the last time you were here? A month ago, 6 weeks ago, the last time that Harry was here.
Is that true, Mike?
Yes, Mr. Dollar, I'm afraid.
But you didn't hesitate to accept the money she kept sending
you. At least I tried to make my own way.
Oh, sure. Big, ambitious little Michael.
Well, what have you done for us?
At least I've stayed here these past few weeks and gone through the motions of being nice to her. Kept her company, helped her with her clothes, fixed her hair for her, and, well...
Is that true, Mrs. Haskell?
Yes, sir.
Fixed her hair for her. Big deal.
Miss Manton, Miss Nancy even bought her that big hair-drying machine.
Oh.
And the poor dear loved it so she was washing her hair 3 and 4 times a week.
Now, what's that got to do with what we're discussing?
Wait a minute. That's right. If it hadn't been for this crazy machine... She would have been downstairs where we might have... Oh,
wait.
Well, don't take it out on the hairdryer,
Michael. I said wait a minute.
My brain was fairly spinning. A news item in the New York papers less than a month ago. A freak accident, 1 in 1 million at a beauty parlor. A professional hair dryer machine, exactly like the one lying here on the floor. There'd been pictures of it, sketches, to show exactly what had happened. A tiny wire had come loose. It shocked the customer so badly that she'd lost consciousness. There'd been a big noise over it. And now here was Mrs. Tilford, a little frail old lady with a heart condition. Yeah, yeah.
What is it, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, Johnny. What's that funny look supposed to mean?
Plenty. Mrs. Haskell, did you ever help Mrs. Tilford with this machine?
Oh, jeez, I'd never even touched that contraption of the devil, sir.
Dollar, this old biddy wouldn't even let Mrs. Tilford install an electric stove. But I failed to...
Listen, when was this thing purchased?
Well, about 3 weeks ago, I still have the bill for it in my office. Another of Nancy's little tricks gave it to Mrs. Tilford as a gift, but charged it to her account. But I failed to...
Three weeks ago... So when I find the wire on it, it was cut instead of simply broken off when it fell.
Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, and I'm glad you didn't kick this thing anymore, Mike. You see it here? When she clamped this thing on her head, this wire touched her wet scalp.
Oh, now just... Good heavens.
Then when she turned on the switch, well, that was it. Harry, you haven't been here for weeks.
Well, I know, but I...
Nor have you, Michael. And Mrs. Haskell was afraid to touch the thing. Well?
Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy. You were here, Nancy. And a few weeks ago, when you read in the papers how one of these machines might...
No!
Kevin, Dollar!
Oh, put it down, Nancy.
No. I'll kill you. I'll kill all of you. Sure, I did it, but nobody will ever know, because none of you will be alive.
That's where you're wrong, Nancy!
Michael! All right, Nancy.
No! Let go of me!
Sorry!
Learned a little lesson in clean living from this, Harry?
Yes. Yes, Dollar. I'll call the police.
So Nancy's wild shot busted one of his ribs, but Michael recovered. Nancy, I don't know what the penalty for murder is in Ohio, but believe me, she'll find out the hard way. As for the estate, well, that's up to the courts, too. No doubt much of what might have been Nancy's share will go to the company for that payment on the fire. Expense account total, including the trip back to Hartford, $162.70. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a night in Paris that brings me fun, romance, and a quick brush with that old character known as Death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Ellen Cleave, Shirley Mitchell, Ben Wright, Sam Edwards, Harry Bartell, and Lawrence Dobkin. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Jim Matthews speaking.
Johnny Dollar.
George Reed here.
Well, George, how's Floyd's in London? And how are you holding up in this hot weather?
Johnny, all I can say is I wish I could make a trip to France at some somebody else's expense.
Now, what's that supposed to mean?
I just received a transatlantic telephone call. Collect, by the way, from that underworld friend of yours in Paris.
De Marsac. Louis de Marsac.
Yes.
Calls himself Le Chat Gris.
That's right, the gray cat. Well, why he ever chose to call himself that, huh?
Because at night all cats are gray.
So he's hard to see in the dark.
Well, free enough yourself. Paris after dark. And de Marsac knows more about the dark alleys and sewers and back streets. But what did he call you about, George?
He wants to talk to you about the only diamond.
The what?
$750,000 worth of diamonds, a necklace, that was stolen from the Earl of Olney during a recent visit to the United States.
Le Chat Gris has a lead on him?
He wouldn't say, but if he has, he can get them back. Well, believe me, we shan't quibble over your expense account.
Including whatever may be necessary to grease the palm of de Marsac? His information usually comes pretty high, you know.
I understand that.
And a bit of an allowance, shall we say, for my own entertainment while I'm there?
Well, now, don't go overboard, Johnny.
Sure, I'll be in touch.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Deployed to London, North American office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the night in Paris matter. Expense account item one, $12 even for a call to Paris, France. To a man I wouldn't trust any further than you could throw the loo. Louis de Marsac.
Oui, Monsieur Dollar. This is your oldest, your dearest friend, Le Chat Gris.
Oldest and dearest friend, huh?
But of course.
One of the crookedest, chiselingest connivers I ever met.
Oh,
but
no.
But George Reed says you have some information about the only diamond, which means you've got your hand out, as usual.
Oh, believe me, mon ami. I only told him that I wished to speak to you about something.
You didn't hint around about those diamonds?
Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps I did make some very slight reference about them.
Yeah.
When he objected to my phoning him what you call collect.
You know where those diamonds are, de Marsac? Well? Okay, how much do you want this time?
Monsieur, you are speaking of money.
What else?
Mon ami, you hurt me. You touched me to the quick.
Oh, sure. How much?
Well, one might think that I slave and suffer and risk my life on your behalf only for money.
How much, de Marsac?
Say, $10,000 American.
Yeah, well, it was nice to talk to you. See you around sometime.
No. Wait. The only diamonds are worth millions.
Millions of francs, not dollars.
But if I could tell you where you may find them?
In that case, I might be willing to part with, say, 1,000. Maybe 1,500.
5,000?
If I actually get my hands on them, I'll give you 2.
4?
3,000, that's final.
3,500?
Goodbye, to my sack.
No, 2,500.
I said I... Huh?
2,000. 2?
Okay, $2,000.
Yeah, then I think I would, what you say, cost myself up.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
But do not worry, mon ami. Do not worry. I will do the same for you.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Now listen, if I take a plane out of New York a little after 9 tonight, I should get there tomorrow at 5:45 p.m. Paris time.
Maybe.
I'll hang my hat at the Hotel of Bois. You know where that is?
But of course.
Then I'll pick you up at that hovel of yours at the end of the,
Rue de Pont de la Moule.
Yeah, the Rue de Pont de la Moule.
And you will bring the money for me?
I'll be there. Expense account item 2, $1,000 worth of American Express traveler's checks. 428 of it went for plane fare, Hartford to New York to Paris. The flight was uneventful, except for the person who occupied the seat next to me. Annette was her name, Annette Dubon. And brother, well, she's 25 or 6, I guess. Tall, brunette, and beautiful. Apparently has money of her own. And I decided this trip to Paris wasn't a bad idea at all.
Johnny Dollar?
Yeah.
Oh, I know who you are. You're the insurance investigator I hear about all the time on the radio.
Well, don't look so shocked about it.
Shocked? I'm thrilled. Tell me all about you.
Oh, I'd a lot rather talk about you. plan to be in Paris long?
Oh, a couple of weeks, I guess. Just sort of a vacation. And I'm all alone, so I don't have any definite plans.
Ah.
Have you, Johnny?
I have now.
You certainly don't beat around the bush, do you? You know something? I like that.
Well, good. Now, where will you be staying?
The Joyeux Cinq.
All right, then as soon as I get things cleared away, I'll call you.
Are you over here to work on some kind of a case?
No, just to see an old friend of mine.
Are you by any chance staying at the Joyeux Cinq?
The Lavois. It's over on...
I know where it is. And as soon as you're free, you'll call me, too.
Are you kidding? Well, about that time, the stewardess, bless her heart, came around with a champagne. So, what with one thing and another, the time passed quickly. Then, at exactly 5:45 p.m. Paris time, we landed at Orly. Item 3, 5:20 American for a taxi to my hotel, after dropping Annette off along the way. I shaved and showered, then took another cab to the dingy little apartment of Louis de Marsac at the far end of the Rue de Pas de la Moule. You ask me, it's one of the most disreputable-looking apartments in the whole city. Dirty, squalid, ramshackle. And, of course, Le Chagri had to live at the top of four long flights of stairs. When I finally get up there, feeling slightly winded, I noticed that his door at the end of the gaslit hallway was standing wide open. What? De Marsac. Louis. Louis de Marsac. Louis. Dingy, dark apartment of Louis de Marsac looked like a tornado had struck it. It was a shambles, as though somebody had come in and simply done as much damage as possible, and yet at the same time was looking for something or someone. As for de Marsac, there was no sign of him anywhere. I stood there for a moment, wondering what to do next. Huh?
Hello, hello.
Yeah?
Monsieur, darling?
Who are you?
Now listen.
Oh, do you mind telling me what under the sun happened to this joint of yours?
Listen, please. You have turned on the light?
No, but there's enough light coming up in the street.
Yeah, yeah. Now you must get out of there.
Oh?
Yes, come quickly and meet me here. Now, please, you will do that?
Well, where are you?
You're alone?
Yes, I'm alone.
Then you must leave before somebody finds you there.
Like who?
There is no time to talk, mon ami. Come, please, and meet me here.
But where?
I'm at the cafe, Chez Macabre.
Chez Macabre.
Yes, it's in Saint-Germain-des-Prés. What you call beatnik.
Okay, I'll find it.
Do not delay now. You may be in danger.
Yeah, sure. I'll grab a taxi. Huh? Who are you?
Au revoir, cochon.
Oh, hello. No, you don't.
Monsieur.
No.
Hello. Hello.
C'est bien, pig.
When I came to, I found myself propped up in the remains of a chair. A bottle of cognac and a glass had been placed on a table beside me. I helped myself. And next to it, a piece of paper. Scribbled on it were the words, Je regrette. I'm sorry. Though believe me, if I ever catch up with him, he's going to be a lot sorrier. Another snort of cognac and I felt able to navigate. I went downstairs, grabbed a taxi, that's item 4, a couple of bucks, and had him take me to the place to my second mention over the phone, the Chez Macabre. And what a joint. I've seen a few beatnik pads that were pretty crazy back in the States. But nothing to compare with this. It was a smoky, dark, and dirty place. The beatniks packed into it were dirty, too. Characters were made a business of being characters, including a gaunt chick chanting some poetry in a corner. Then a wormy little man sidled up to my table out of the shadows and proceeded to help himself to my drink. Yeah, it was de Marsac, the Chagri.
You do not seem to know me at first, one of me.
Even when you come over and help yourself to my cognac?
In this place, it is the custom. But what happened to you when you hang up the telephone on me?
Well, somebody sneaked in and worked me over to Marsac. Any idea who it might have been?
No. I hope he did not hurt you too badly.
Well, he did all right. But why? Now, why the crazy note he left saying he was sorry?
But of course, monsieur.
But of course what?
Well, he must have thought you were me.
Oh?
Oui, because of a little deal on the statue that I made a week ago. In my business with some of the terrible people I have to deal with, This sort of thing happens all the time.
I'll bet.
But then, when this man he discovered he had made a mistake, that you were not me.
Oh, sure. What can you, the American, know of the art, the poetry of today?
Huh? Now, what brought that on?
Yeah, I will translate for you then my lovely, my beautiful ode to nothing.
Ode to nothing?
Listen to my every magnificent word.
Oh, now, wait a
minute. Nothing, 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 nothing.
Huh?
Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Oh, now, look, for the Marsac, come on down to work.
Wait. It is all right now.
Huh? All right, what do you mean?
It was for the benefit of the man who came by the table, who looked at us.
Oh, yeah, I noticed him.
He was very curious about us, like a spy.
A spy?
Yes, of course. He may have been from my dear friend, Monsieur François Dubesson.
Wait a minute. François Dubesson. Isn't he the fence who got hold of that painting that was stolen from Vincent Price a while back?
That I helped you to recover for a slight fee.
And it was through him that you located the Blue Madonna that was taken from the gallery in Philadelphia.
The scene. And now it is Dubesson who has the only diamond.
You're sure of that?
I am sure. Also, it was Dubesson who arranged to have them stolen back in your United States.
Your good friend, huh?
But of course.
But you're perfectly willing to double-cross him. Why?
Because you will pay me so well.
If I get my hands on the diamond.
Oh, I have it all arranged. So, if you would like to pay me now, the $5,000 American...
When I get my hands on him. And it's only $2,000, remember?
Sweetie, I cheated myself.
Okay, now, how do I get them?
I have told him that you're here, that you are very rich, that you will pay him 50 million francs.
15? Well, that's close to $30,000.
It is better that we may lost to you, Captain.
All right, where will I find him, this Francois de Bouton?
He will come to you.
With the diamond?
Yes, at your hotel. Tonight at midnight.
He knows my name?
Well, I've told him that you are Mr. Robert Matthews from Texas.
Hey, yeah, good. Then I'll have to take another room under that name.
But of course.
And you're sure he doesn't know who I really am? My business?
No, because only I could tell him that.
All right, now look, Demarsac. If you have any idea double-crossing me...
You? Oh, my oldest, my dearest... And yet, if you were to find out that... 3,000.
Okay, Demarsac. If it all goes off without a hitch. But if it doesn't...
Oh, have no fear, mon ami.
Sure, it was a kind of shady deal to make. To have to make. But under the circumstances, what else? And people simply don't realize how most of the crimes in this world are solved. Not by Sherlock Holmes type of detective work, not by the kind of stuff you read in the mystery magazines, but through informants. And one way or another, they all have to be paid off. Otherwise, well, look at this case. If Dubesson were to know who I really am, I'd stand a chance of not only losing the case, but my life as well. On the way back to my hotel, I began to wonder again about the man who'd attacked me there at the Marsac's apartment, who'd apparently been there before, looking for someone, or for me. Did he really think I was Demarsac? Or was it all just a warning to leave this case alone? There was only one way to find out. Back in my hotel, I arranged for another room under the name of Robert Matthews from Texas, USA. It was a room adjoining my own with a connecting door. In it, using my best Texas drawl, I'd meet Francois Dubesson when he came at midnight with the Olney Diamond. 15 million francs, Demarsac had told him. Little enough for a necklace worth 750,000. But I've never yet paid a thief for the return of stolen goods, and I had no intention of doing so this time. I settled down to wait for midnight. And then I suddenly realized why I'd felt only half-dressed ever since I was attacked over in Demarsac's apartment. Sure, my gun was missing. Without it, and if Dubesson was wise to me, was the phone in the other room, the one where I'd act out the part of the rich Texan, if there was any point in it. Hello.
Monsieur Matthews?
Yep.
My name is Dubesson. François Dubesson.
Say, I've been waiting to hear from you.
You are alone, monsieur.
Don't think I'd let anybody else in on our little deal, do you?
I hope not. I can be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah, any time you say. I'm just laying here in bed reading to myself.
You have the necessary money with you? In cash?
Just finished taking it out of the hotel safe.
Monsieur Matthews, if we're able to make what you call a deal.
Sure, we can, man.
Oui, but I must inform you I will come to your room prepared for any, shall we say, exigency.
Huh? Now, what's that?
The gun I carry. It has a silencer. 5 minutes.
I'll be here. I suddenly had an idea that might possibly work. Out of a small rug, a pair of shoes, and a couple of other things, I fashioned a dummy, laid it carefully in the bed in the other room, after making sure the head of that bed was toward the door. I piled up a couple of pillows so that even if there really been someone in it, only the outline under the covers would be visible. I left a cigarette burning in an ashtray, propped up a magazine. From the doorway, then, it looked like someone lying there, reading and smoking. I hoped. I unscrewed a light bulb, then stood behind the slightly open adjoining door. Come in, man. Come in.
You were very foolish, Monsieur Dollar, to say you obtained the money from the hotel safe. The night clerk has informed me otherwise. Also, he confessed it was you who took both of these rooms. Well, have you anything to say?
I told you Dollar was here because of the jewels, Francois.
Annette.
Oui, ma chérie. So, Annette, you may dispose of him once and for all. Close the door.
No! Look, there's a dummy in that bed.
You're right.
But Dollar has no gun now. And if he's here, Francois...
Take care, ma chérie.
Don't worry. First, we try that other room.
I nudged open the adjoining door, and with everything I had, I pitched the light bulb across the room at the far wall.
No, he's in here!
Then I dove in low at the first of them I could reach.
Annette! A bad mistake, Johnny. Because I have the gun.
Yeah. I suppose I should have known, Annette.
Your last mistake. Because with this silencer, nobody will ever know.
Oh, I'm sorry, mademoiselle. Oh, dear.
Oh, thanks, Tomasak. Like the U.S. Marines.
But such a pity, monsieur.
Huh?
That I should stoop so low as to strike a beautiful woman.
Of course, the fact that it saved my life.
5,000.
Sure. 5,000. Of course, there'll be some fancy international legal procedure necessary, but I'm sure the company can arrange for return of the necklace to the United States. As for Dubassin and the lovely but treacherous Annette, well, the Paris police are making the arrangements for them, and I'm sure they won't be very pleasant ones. Expense account total, including a couple of nights on the town, $5,000 for Dumasac and deluxe transportation back home, $5,878 even. Wow. Oh, incidentally, I met a luscious little blonde on that return trip who... Well, she... Now, let's not go into that. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a foggy night on the Embarcadero in San Francisco. In the shadows, a killer. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Boris Lewis, G. Stanley Jones, Tony Barrett, Bill James, and Gus Bays. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Days. If you enjoy our show, please do take a moment and send us a kind review. And remember to share our show with others. Until next time, everyone, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.